I sent you.
Thank you very much for that that warm welcome and that over-flattering detail of my professional career. I intend today to deal with an issue of heritage and expectations. The intention is that I'll talk for probably 25-30 minutes. There'll be time then for questions after that. So if you've got some questions, by all means, on any heritage issue, I'm more than happy to deal with them at that time, or issues that may arise through the presentation that I'm about to present to you. In starting with the issue of heritage and expectations, it's worth just actually providing a definition of heritage. Heritage is all the things that make up Australia's identity, our spirit and ingenuity, our historic buildings, and our unique living landscapes. Our heritage is a legacy from our past, a living integral part of life today, and the stories and places we pass on to future generations. That's a very important definition because it not only deals with what's existed and what is relevant today, but it is for future generations as well. And I will only be dealing with the built heritage because that's the area of my expertise and interest is the buildings and the built heritage rather than other aspects of heritage like Aboriginal heritage, flora and flora, and natural heritage. So it's the built heritage. And what I intend to do is actually cover a whole range of people who are involved or come into contact with heritage issues and expand on some of their expectations. And also I want to then bring together at the end some issues that I think are relevant and there's some directions that we should move forward in respect to how we deal with heritage in a far more effective way. And I'll start with the domestic area. We all live in homes and some of us live in a heritage home. Fortunately, I live in a heritage home, an 1859 old inn. And as a person obviously with a deep interest in heritage, protecting that original fabric from 1859 is very important. But I live in the place. I need to actually enjoy and be able to have a family, live in the place and enjoy it as well. I'm in the process of my third extension to it. And despite the fact that it is a heritage place, it does not prevent you from doing things to it. And that's a misconception which is very widely. Because it is heritage listed, you cannot do anything with it. And we need to actually expand that it is possible to adapt or use heritage places far more effectively and enjoy them. And I'll deal with some of those issues towards the conclusion. But really, it is important that you are able to amend whatever. It's a matter of understanding what is significant in that building and what is important to retain. In our particular case, the modifications were extensions, right? And then one minor modification internally to accommodate a modern bathroom facility in what was previously an outbuilding of it. But if you've got a heritage place, then there is an opportunity to deal with it and amend it. The other area which comes into a much broader area is conservation areas. Now, conservation areas are identified because of a character of a suburb or character of an area. And Hall is one such conservation area that exists within Canberra. It is about the character that exists within that. And it's really important to actually understand what's the character of it. But it's interesting when dealing with individuals that live within a conservation area and their perceptions about what they can and can't do and what may happen. And it frequently is an issue that arises with something next door or something you want to do with your own house within a conservation area. And I had a situation recently where a proposed demolition and a new build in a conservation area, and that is possible within certain conservation areas. There are certain parts of like forest in the ACT where you can actually demolish and rebuild. There are certainly individually identified places, but there is actually a lot of places which can be. And that suburb is going through an enormous rebirth in respect to demolition of the smaller houses and large buildings put in place. But I find that some of the, if you like, the overall general conservation controls that exist in the ACT don't necessarily aren't the best mechanism to deal with individual places within those conservation areas. And I think sometimes that they actually end up being over-regulated or over-controlled without understanding what is the character of that area and give some flexibility to actually how you can actually replace a house or extend a house within a conservation area. One of the critical issues within these conservation areas and other areas of Canberra, not in my backyard. And what happens is that you may see a development going next door, you may not particularly like it, so within a conservation area you've got some better controls that may help your case to actually argue against it. But one of the things which does happen, and there's some positives and negatives about it, frequently a individual person will say, look, I don't like what's going to happen next door. Can I heritage list it or can I get some sort of heritage listing to stop that development occurring? It usually occurs when there's a development proposal on the board, on the table, and there's a certain urgency about it. In most situations, seriously, I think that those not in my backyard scenario are dubious to count them. However, there are some situations where there are examples which I think we do need to take care and acknowledge. And the situation is in a couple of areas. One is early modernist houses. And it's a study which the ACT National Trust is undertaking at the moment. But there's very little recognition of the after World War II houses within the ACT. And frequently you don't know about them until there's a development application or a demolition proposed on that particular site. And unfortunately, in some situations, it's been too late to actually do much about it. But it's really important that somehow when these gems that exist within our residential areas really need to be somehow identified and have a level of protection against them, because there are some excellent examples of Australia's leading architects within the residential areas which is not being adequately identified and protected. There are some recent examples which have along those lines which have come to it. Another one which came through quite recently was an intact 1938 house in an inner area of Canberra, not in a conservation area. It was proposed to a quite a large development on that particular site. It was in an area which had a certain character of the 1930s still existing within that area. And it had never come to the attention of anybody before. But to actually see that we still have some examples of architecture and design and living from the 1930s still existing in Canberra, it was worthy of, I think, of some recognition in that way. And I think it would be far more appropriate than the proposed development on that particular site. But that was only brought to our attention, or my attention, through the potential demolition and redevelopment. So there are some circumstances like that which I think are valuable to identify and to actually try and take steps to actually do something about it. It's a matter of informing people and understanding and getting as much information, because advanced information is far better than a reactive information process. And we really need to try and get ahead of the game rather than a knee-jerk reaction at the end of the chain. And that leads to the issue of developers. I actually believe that developers have a respect for heritage. And I say that because developers are in the game basically to build or do something which is possible and make a dollar out of it. Got no problem with that in principle. And if a developer knows what the rules are and what the conditions are, they can allow for those sorts of constraints in their feasibility studies. And if they know that they will respect the heritage values of it, they'll and move within those constraints and develop it and adaptively reuse it. Now, obviously, developers are mainly in commercial buildings, and we've been associated with a large number of heritage-listed buildings which have been adapted. Even ones that are effectively museum, like Old Parliament House, there's a constant adaptation that's occurring within that building to meet changing exhibition requirements, to meet changing codes and standards or other requirements. And there's enough flexibility to do that if the information is known beforehand. There have been examples within Canberra where a site has been sold by government without any constraints. The developer then has to then interpret what the opportunities and constraints are in a very short tender period of time, which they don't have the time to actually do it properly. And in this particular case, the developer then, having purchased the site, then went on to do some studies. And in those studies, the building on the site was listed for have some architectural heritage value. But the development was on the basis that the building would be demolished. And I think it's farcical when the outcome of that particular scenario was you can demolish the building, provided you record it, and give $100,000 to another property somewhere else in Canberra. And it's because the governing body who sold the land did not do due diligence and inform the developers or the people purchasing that block of land enough information to be reasonable understanding of the constraints and opportunities on that site. If the studies had been done, the outcome would have been totally different, but it could still well have been sold and adapted, but there would have been a different outcome. As where the lack of information that goes forward to a developer and a lack of understanding of the controls and opportunities, that's where everything comes unstuck and the developer gets a bad name, the heritage gets a bad name, and everybody else associated with it gets a bad name, which I think is really unfortunate. And we've got to get our act together much better in respect to those sorts of circumstances that exist. Another one is the government. And they're obviously a very important player in respect to the whole process because the government sets the rules and the conditions that apply to heritage. By and large, they're there, they're workable. I think they sometimes need some updating and some refinements. And the other thing which I find unfortunate is some of the conservation guidelines which in the conservation areas which were set in 2008 are not necessarily applicable today. Issues like solar energy and how solar panels can go into a house are not adequately dealt with within those general guidelines. The other thing which I find frustrating and annoying is the guidelines are generic across all the conservation areas, and there are differences within the conservation areas which really need the guidelines being modified, tweaked or whatever, or given an opportunity to actually talk to them or understand them much better. The guidelines for a conservation area for Reed, where there's a unified design, a unified landscape design of Griffin's ideal of landscape cities, and also a unified set of houses, quite different to Hall, where there's a totally different character within it. The housing and the setbacks and everything else varies at a far greater extent, and therefore there needs to be some greater flexibility in dealing with it. The other area which is not too common in ACT are museums. You're fortunate to have one part museum here, and obviously the ACT has got the classical museums of the Lanyon, Mugga Mugga, and Calthorpe's House. And they are exemplary for a particular reason, and it's the integrity of those reasons are actually really important to maintain, so that the quality and detail actually reflects a period of architecture and style. I've been fortunate just recently to come back from Scotland, and it's really interesting to see how some of the Scottish castles are actually presented. And the one that I probably found most interesting was the vegan one in Isle of Skye. It is still a house or castle that's lived in, at least for 6 months of the year, and then the owner shifts off to London for the winter. But to actually see a museum and see a museum how it actually lived and worked is far more interesting and informative than what Edinburgh Castle was. Edinburgh Castle has got a number of exhibits and large spaces of halls and stuff, had a mass of people through it, even though it wasn't the height of tourist season and it wasn't the school holidays, anything else, a mass of people through it. But it was missing an understanding of how that building operated and really worked for the centuries that it exists. And it's interesting when you compare Australian examples with overseas examples. Australia, we talk on decades. Overseas, they talk of centuries. And that, I think, is an interesting comparison and issue. But the museums that exist are really important to get down to another level of detail of understanding and interpretation of buildings. There's also, obviously, the heritage professionals, and they can range from an architect like myself, or it can range from archaeologists, a whole series of other specialists in respect to materials conservators, structural engineers, mechanical engineers that deal with the heritage issues. And obviously there's an understanding and a passion of heritage issues, and they get involved with the whole process of dealing with adaptive reuse and modifications to meet current codes and standards. Obviously, we try to do the best thing in all our cases. It's really interesting when you get down to listing of a place or a change to a place that is borderline respect to whatever, the borderline respect to whether it meets the criteria for a heritage listing, whether it goes too far. And one of the issues that so-called might go too far is a modern extension to a heritage place. Now, commercially, there are some very good examples. The state government, the New South Wales Gallery, is excellent, where it's got some very modern extensions to a very old building, and I think it works extremely well. There are some good examples of modern additions to a heritage building and recognised that way. But there are certainly examples, and one in Griffiths in Murray Crescent, where it's a very modern extension to an existing house. There will always be a debate about whether that's appropriate as infill or development or extensions or not. And when you get decisions being made by this Ministry of Appeals Tribunal, I think it's really unfortunate that critical issues are being made by people who have very little understanding. It's just interpretation of the guidelines and the rules. But ACAT is used to determine a number of decisions in respect to either heritage listing or not heritage listing. It's a process. It is expensive and time consuming. And that's obviously a process that some clients can't afford, and certainly developers and other things don't really want to factor it into the whole process. I think it's unfortunate when decisions of any matter, whether it be planning or whether it be heritage, are actually made through that sort of government instrumentation. So where should we go to? I have a strong view that the best way to look after a heritage place is to use it. And if that use means some level of, if you like, compromise or change, then I think that should be permitted. And as per the example that I talked about, decades in Australia to centuries overseas, these houses within most European areas have been occupied and changed and modified for centuries without a difficulty. And I think sometimes, seriously, Australia were a bit too precious about trying to control change when it really is to best to actually use and live, make it livable. If someone's living in a place, they will identify it. They will actually look after a problem that and fix the problem before it becomes a bigger problem, and therefore some of the base heritage values can be lost. There are examples that where leaking roofs have accentuated a deterioration of building fabric as a result of not being fixed, and usually come through an unoccupied building. But if the building was occupied, that problem would be fixed. So I really, really very strongly that the use of a building is fundamental to the best conservation practice within Australia and anywhere. The other problem I have in respect to is the planning heritage process. The heritage listing controls the heritage restrictions within the defined area. And when you're talking about an urban area, it's really important a context. Now, certain places like Lanyon have a context because development was prevented from going too close to it, so it has a rural feel. But a context, in this, for instance, Northbourne Avenue, the context of the heritage buildings on that strip were basically taken out of the territory plan, and the heritage listing is a very tight border. What you can do beyond that is under the planning control. But from an urban design point of view and a sustainability point of view, I don't think that's the best solution for this city or any heritage issue. The way the system works at the moment is that the heritage list what is significant from in a controlled area, and then the planning goes beyond that. The conservation management plans that may be produced may identify issues that extend beyond the listed boundary, but it is the planner's responsibility to pick that up, and virtually in 100% of cases they ignore it. So you end up with a tiny little heritage place in amongst a very high rise development around it. And I don't think that's the best urban design outcome or the best heritage outcome. Because I actually believe that it actually, in some ways, makes the developer's life more difficult. It means that the heritage values in a broader sense are actually not appreciated. And some of those are not necessarily easy to solve. You talk about Sydney and Melbourne building a civic, and now that the car parks are being developed, what is an acceptable relationship between those buildings and the buildings across the road and the heights and the controls on them? And there are other buildings nearby that are heritage listed in those two particular scenarios. So it's not necessarily an easy situation, but I really believe for a better outcome, particularly in Canberra, and the Garden City ideals, which are gradually being eroded more and more by urban development, it needs an overarching understanding of what is significant, what Griffin's plan was, how we best maintain the Garden City ideals throughout the whole of the city, and implement them in an overall planning strategy that actually works, and also consider the individual buildings and how the urban context around them really needs to respect those heritage values and appreciate it. There's been a recent one in respect to Civic Square and the Commonwealth Bank Association, and one of the reasons why it was considered the Commonwealth Bank being important was the scale and the relationship of the square there. It's not stopping development on the site, but it will maintain some level of control in respect to the streetscape and the character of the area, which I think is really important. So it really is important, I believe, that these various expectations from our community, and most people have an empathy for heritage, but heritage needs to be seen as a positive. And it's really interesting, you can't maintain a positive aspect of heritage without decisions being made efficiently and decisions being made consistently and available. One of the biggest frustrations at the moment, which operates Australia-wide, is the lack of staff and people within heritage areas and timely decisions in respect to reports and information. Heritage, if it takes 6 months, 12 months to get a decision from a heritage conservation management plan or whatever else, it is a real negative attitude, a problem for heritage. And I find that a lot of the heritage authorities and councils throughout Australia are perceived as a stumbling block because they're inadequately resourced and also aren't performing within reasonable time frames that other planning instruments and whatever takes. And I find that quite frustrating. If it takes 2 years and you can't get an answer on a conservation management plan, or a development application 6 months and you're still waiting for a decision, and you proceed with the building work and you have to leave it out, I think that really is a major problem that exists within this city. And it's not just restricted to the city, it's actually a Commonwealth government problem as well as also as to other states and territories problems. Somehow we've got to make the government aware that heritage is of value. It is important to adequately resource if it's going to be clearly identified and make sure it actually works, because there is an expectation that the heritage will be protected and there's an expectation that heritage will be understood and the rules associated with it will be understood by all, whether it be a resident or a commercial developer, so that we can actually better look after our heritage. It's interesting, when I travel, one of the key reasons I do travel is obviously professional, but from heritage. A lot of people come to Canberra because of the heritage value, because of the Garden City, because of the National Institution, and most of those are heritage listed as well, from the buildings, but also their collections. And yet, heritage isn't up there as being the primary issue that should be promoted. Canberra should be nationally listed. It should be internationally listed on the UNESCO World Heritage. And I think the more that we actually understand the pressure of the politicians to actually take some of those steps forward, I think we'll be far better off. So my expectation is that Canberra should be on the National Heritage List. Canberra should be on a World Heritage List. And my expectation is that somewhere, sometime, and sometime soon, heritage will be adequately resourced so that we can work together, make sure it happens to everybody's expectations.